So in the next 20, 25 minutes, I will try to convince you why latent tuberculosis infection is important. But first, let me refresh what happened when we get in contact with TB. So you see here the first level of defense that we have is the alveolar macrophages. So we inhale mycobacterium tuberculosis, it gets to infection to counteract with the alveolar macrophages. And what's happening is most of the time, the mycobacteria are killed by the macrophages, and there is no infection. Nothing happened. So the vast majority of the exposure, they end up with nothing. But for some reason, in some persons, because you have more bacteria or because maybe the macrophages do not work well because it's a smoker, and then you get the infection. And what happened with the infection, you have now a perfect way for the body to respond to the infection, which is by creating the so-called granulomatous response. So you see here the granuloma, which is a microscopic structure with giant cells, caseosis, and CD4 T cells around. And what happens when you have a granuloma in your lung? You get the state which is called latent TB infection. It's characterized by two factors. One is a very strong cellular response, very strong response. Secondly, low proliferation of mycobacteria. So no one is born with latent TB infection. Latent TB infection is a status which is happening after the mycobacteria establish granuloma in the lung. And in few occasions, when there is no, basically, containment, the patient can go directly to active disease. This is the case for newborns or HIV-infected, which is characterized by the opposite, and the opposite is very ineffective immune response and progressive disease. Now, 99% of the cases of TB, they derive from reactivation of latent TB infection. So latent TB infection, in the vast majority of cases, is a prerequisite for having tuberculosis. And we know exactly from animal models that what happened for the mycobacteria to be transported to the lymph nodes, it takes about 8-9 days post-infection for the mycobacteria to go to the lymph nodes. Then the lymph nodes will prime with T cells. The T cells will go back through the blood and will create basically the granuloma, and this will take 2 weeks more. So 2-3 weeks you get from the inhalation of mycobacteria towards the creation of the granuloma. Keep in mind this cell. This is a lymphocyte primed in the lymph nodes, specific for that strain of mycobacteria, traveling in the blood, going back to the lung, and creating the granuloma. Now, latent TB infection is a disease, is a status. You see here every 3, 4, 5 years the New England Journal of Medicine is publishing statement on latent TB infection. This is latent TB infection in the United States. And we know that there are risk factors for progressing from latent TB infection towards tuberculosis, typically HIV, but also to be a contact, HLTB, prednisone, any dose, chronic renal failure, anti-TNF-alpha, diabetes, underweight, and smoking. These are all risk factors for progressing from latent TB infection towards active disease. Now, latent TB infection is a curable state. We know from the 60s, there have been randomized controlled trials, placebo control, showing that if you treat a person with latent TB infection with a specific drug, which is in this case is isoniazid, then you reduce the risk of progressing from latent infection to active TB infection by more than 95%. So the bottom line is that patients with latent TB infection should be diagnosed and treated. And this, in the US, is mandatory in guidelines since 1965. So if you are in the US, you see a patient with latent TB infection, you don't support the treatment for latent TB infection, you are liable and guilty because not treating at this pathology status. Now, how to treat that, that's a different story. Compliance, all of that. But this is the concept. Now I will tell you a story which is related to myself. So I'm Italian, coming from this part of Italy, of course. See, nice, I'm sure you are familiar with Italy, which is a very popular thing in Lebanon. Modena is a small city, very small, 200,000 people, very old. You see, here's the cathedral with the church and with the square. It's famous for the cathedral, but it's also famous because we have great singers, we have very good food, and some of this food is familiar also to you. We have good wines, like in Lebanon, they are very pointed, many pointed. We have something else. If you were a pathologist, there is there any pathologist here in the room? I hope not. But if you are a pathologist, look at bigger magnification. You see now this pattern. It's a small village around Modena, and if you look a little bit closer, you will see that there is a track here. So that's Maranello. It's the Ferrari place. So it's a very famous spot in Italy. It's also very famous because, as in Lebanon, we have a huge influx of immigrants. See now, this is the percentage of foreign-born population 2009, and you see these foreign people, they arrive in Sicily and they concentrate. And now, in some part, here is Modena, you see, it's up to 25% of the population made by immigrants. And with figures that are very similar to the one shown before, we have the vast majority of cases of TB in immigrants. Now, this is a story of a young lady, and she was portrayed by the WHO in 2003 as the TB advocacy report. It's a story of a young lady in November 22 of 2001. She was a 24-year-old female from Moldova, and she delivered a baby in the hospital. She was in Italy since 4 years, not really legalized. She was living with an Italian man. She had cabin fever for 6 months in pregnancy. And of course, she got parental care with private doctor because she was an illegal immigrant. She didn't want to get contact with the public system. But 1 week after giving birth to the baby, she was the will become now a legal immigrant with the baby. So she came to the persistent of cough and fever. She came to our hospital, and I was seeing her in my outpatient clinic. I took a chest X-ray, and this is the chest X-ray. The same day, we took a high-resolution CT scan. This is a high-resolution CT scan, and it's very clear now that we have a patient with suspicion of active TB bilateral, and she was admitted to the infectious disease clinic. She was HIV negative, so we tried to extensively inquire. So she had some treatment for TB back in the days in Moldova. We don't know which one, and she gets sputum means positive, maximum scale of WHO. So the diagnosis now is bilateral cavitary active pulmonary TB. We started treatment with four drugs. The problem is that she was admitted to the hospital for 1 week. In this room, she was in this bed. Plus, every day, three times a day, she was going together with the other mothers to milk feed newborns. Now, November, this was a closed room with no ventilation. And it was even worse because the day before Christmas, I received a phone call at home from my microbiology, and she told me now that we need to change the diagnosis because the patient is drug resistant. So I was planning to go here, and instead, now I have a clinical problem, and the problem is we have 41 newborns exposed during the first week of life to MDR-TB. If the baby developed active TB, that's a disaster. If it's drug resistant, it's even worse. We don't know how to test the latent infection because the skin test is very unreliable in kids. We also have 53 adults, mothers also exposed, and also in the adults is a problem. Now, the difference between 41 and 53 is a certain number of husbands that they want to spend all the time with the kids and the mother, which is clearly something not to do. And they were also exposed. Now, what you do? We created a committee, and we decided to ask the expert. Now, the expert in this field at that time and even now is the head of the Pediatric TB Assembly at the American Thoracic Society, Jeff Starkey. We contacted him. We exposed the case with the teleconferencing. We sent all the documents, all the data, and exactly on the night of Christmas Eve, he sent us his reply. And this is his reply. As I said, no one, including me, has the right answer on what to do. Everyone needs to stick to basics, decide one plan of action, and remain calm. Plus, I also suggest having some of your wonderful Italian red wine on hand to protect the doctor's and administrator's heart.
That's a great day.
Very helpful. Now, 3 weeks before, I was reading this paper. It was published in The Lancet. The group is Ajit Lalvani. At that time, he was in Oxford. I was in Imperial College. It was the first time he used a blood test, new blood test called ELISpot, to detect latent TB infection. And this test is based on the idea that instead of testing the T cell response in the skin, you can do that in vitro. More sensitive and more specific. And the key cell here is the same memory cell that you have seen is taken from the blood. Now I called him, he came with his team, and we basically tested every single newborn, every single adult, for a period of 2 years, every 6 months, with this new ELISpot test. Now, I'm not getting into the details of the study because it's a lot of detail, but I will give you just two clinical outcomes. The first clinical outcome is the husband. So the husband clearly was exposed more than anyone else because husband and wife, they tend to share room, air, let's put it that way. Now, this guy was 41 years old. He was on chronic azathioprine therapy for Crohn's disease. Skin test negative, ELISpot positive. No symptoms, no cough, no fever. Now, by protocol, we designed the study since everyone with at least a positive test, either skin test or ELISpot, has to have a high-resolution CT scan. Initially, he refused, but then he get the high-resolution CT scan. Skin test negative, ELISpot positive, asymptomatic. This is the high-resolution CT scan. You have a microcavitation here in the upper lobe. So what we did a bronchoscopy, we isolated the germ, get a provisional active MDR-TB diagnosis. It was put on 5 drugs, no hospital admission, no isolation. It's not contagious, but we tested, and it was the same strain as the index case. So we get an early diagnosis of active multidrug-resistant TB in the setting of a positive ELISpot triggering high-resolution CT scan. Now, you go from, remember, this skin test was negative. So if we were based on skin test and chest X-ray, both of them would have been negative. We need to go to a higher level of resolution by ELISpot and higher resolution CT scan. The second case that I want to discuss with you is the newborn. Also, the newborn was heavily exposed because the mother stayed at home for 1 week, milk feeding the newborn. So the newborn was more exposed than any other newborn. So it was asymptomatic, but it was heavily exposed. Now, we started chemoprophylaxis on him, even based on suggestion from the CDC, with ethambutol and pyrazinamide for 9 months in a newborn. And you can imagine the risk and the pain of doing that. But we survey with skin test and ELISpot at 3, 6, 12, 18, and 24 months after exposure. Now, he was okay doing chemoprophylaxis 2 years after exposure. He came with cough. We took a chest X-ray, and you see there is a clear enlargement here of the right hilar node. We took a high-resolution CT scan, and you see there are lymph nodes, but also an infiltration here with a microcavitation 2 years after exposure on chemoprophylaxis. We did the bronchoscopy. We isolated from the gastric aspirate and bronchial lavage. RFLAP is exactly the same germ. So this was the germ. So he was infected 2 years before. Get chemoprophylaxis, ineffective, he developed active TB. Interestingly, if you look at this graph, These are the results of the skin test. These are the results of the ELISpot. You see here, it was already positive for ELISpot, but negative for the skin test. And when he became actually symptomatic with active TB, then the ELISpot test would go up, and the skin test was positive, and with anti-TB therapy, it goes down. Now, we get many other output from this study, which are all published, and you can see that. But the bottom line is that now we are moving from a skin test-based to a blood test-based. And this has been a very quick and rapid transition from experimental application to clinical practice. Because now, based on these so-called interferon gamma release assays, we see that by exploiting the fact that these antigen-presenting cells present the antigens and the peptides of that specific mycobacterium to the T cells that are circulating, instead of using cytokine induction on the skin test with the PPD, with the tuberculin, which is non-specific, it's also positive in vaccinated people. So once you have someone vaccinated with BCG, the skin test will be positive, even if it's not infected. Here instead, by using specific peptides from Mycobacterium tuberculosis, these two tests now are commercially available, CE marketed and used. This is what we use now to screen our patient for latent TB infection. If you have a patient which is undergoing, let's say, therapy with anti-TNF-alpha, prednisone therapy, is a contact of a TB case. Or if you want to screen someone for latent TB infection. It's very impractical to use the skin test because the skin test will need a visit return, is confounded by the BCG, and the reading is very subjective. I can read 2 millimeters, you can read 5 millimeters, he can read 8 millimeters. With this test, they now entered clinical practice. Both the QuantiFERON TB Gold and the T-SPOT TBs, we measure in peripheral blood the level of response to interferon gamma to specific antigens. And I hope and I think that they will help us to achieve the goal of TB elimination by targeting people with latent TB infection that, I want to remind you again, need to be treated with the so-called chemoprophylaxis or treatment of latent infection if we really want to decrease the rate of reactivation and the rate of TB. Thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you, Professor, for this very interesting presentation. We have some time for a question, please.
Thank you for this nice lecture.
Yes.
I just wanted to know if you have any comments about TB vaccine. Any update on that?
Yes. Unfortunately, the first trials on TB vaccine, they are being negative. So there have been two trials sponsored by the Bill Gates Foundation in Africa. Very good coverage in vitro, very good animal models, not the same result for protection in humans, in population. So I think the vaccine will be ultimately the only way to eliminate TB. But as far as I know, it may take many, many, many years. So TB immunology is probably more complicated than polio immunology or rubella immunology, where we have effective vaccines. So great hope, but for the time being, not big news.
Thank you.
Yeah, question. Yep.
Yes, thank you. Professor, how frequent is the development of an active tuberculosis when the patient is under chemoprophylaxis? And is it mainly because it was a small child? Can we see it also in adults?
Yes, that's a very good question. So first, this was chemoprophylaxis for drug-resistant TB. So the drug to use for chemoprophylaxis is isoniazid. Unfortunately, this drug, this germ was resistant. So we are not able. So prophylaxis with isoniazid is highly effective. And the chances of developing TB during chemoprophylaxis are very low. The problem is that when you are going to treat latent TB caused by drug-resistant germs, you don't know what to use. There is no recommendation. We use pyrazinamide and ethambutol based on our empiric thinking, but that was clearly ineffective because it developed active TB. So the bottom line here is that the treatment of latent TB infection caused by drug-resistant bacteria is ineffective. While when you use isoniazid and the germ is sensitive, that's highly effective. Yes?
Practical question. We get a lot of patients in our clinics, and most of them are from outside Lebanon, and we really have no specific protocols to protect the healthcare workers in the clinic and ourselves. Do you have any specific protocols that you take in your clinic and to protect us, the workers and the nurses?
Yes, that's a very good question. So my first thing is that I think that in every patient that you admit to your hospital, you should have a test for latent TB infection. Everyone. You know, we are testing for everything. We are testing for monoclonal components. We are looking for different type of autoantibodies. Well, you need to know if that patient has a latent TB infection or not for two reasons. One, it's clinically relevant. Let's say this patient is going to need immunosuppression. You need to know if it's latent TB infection or not. Secondly, you know that the patient with latent TB infection can have TB. Then you look more carefully to the clinic and maybe you take a chest X-ray. So I'm convinced that the best way to protect the personnel is to get the diagnosis of TB, because the risk is coming from an undiagnosed case of TB. Like in this case, the lady, she stayed for 6 days in the obstetrics and gynecology, coughing, with fever, being Moldovan, underweight. Why don't you take a chest X-ray there? That was the mistake. So I think the risk is coming from patients which are not diagnosed properly. To diagnose properly, I think the screening of latent TB infection is important, and then, of course, clinic and chest X-ray. Yeah, right. Hi.
Two questions. The first, I think we have an epidemic of latent TB in Lebanon because we have tons of home workers coming from different areas of the world, Southeast Asia and Africa. Some local recommendation would say, well, I mean, first, if we look at the ATS recommendation, used to be before the age of 40, after the age of 40, negative chest X-ray, positive chest X-ray. Well, home workers are usually less than 40 years old. Some people here tend to say, well, if they are exposed to kids, we should prevent or no. So the first question, should we not do PPD anymore on those and just do the interferon test? Gamma interferon test, and then should we treat all the positive with chemoprophylaxis despite negative chest X-ray? That's the first question. And two, any false positive or false negative with the interferon test?
Okay, I will reply. These are spot-on questions. So the first one is, we know that the interferon gamma tests are more specific. So that means that you will screen out positive, false positive PPD. So the problem with this population is that you are going to, if you screen with the skin test, you're going to have a huge number of positives. And then what you do with that number of positive? Your chest is rare on everyone, treat everyone. So the scale of the problem is larger. If you use the interferon gamma test, you will reduce that population, and then it's more feasible to address something. So my first suggestion will be, use the interferon gamma test because it's more specific. You will identify less people. In that less people, you need to have a policy. You can decide, I want to treat everyone because that would be the right thing to do, or I cannot treat everyone. I'm treating the high risk. And again, in where the benefit is going to be bigger. Major benefit, immunosuppressing kids. These are the major benefits. But in theory, you should treat everyone. Now, you know that there is a short course chemotherapy treatment. It's not 6-9 months of isoniazid. Now it's going down to 3 months and it's a weekly doses. So it's much more feasible. It's rifapentin and isoniazid. So I will go interferon gamma, identify fewer individuals, I'm sure they are infected, and I will go with the short-term treatment. False positive, false negative, of course. Very few false positive, very few false positive. There are false negative, but the interferon gamma, they provide you with three possible results: positive, negative, and indeterminate, because they have an internal control. With the skin test, you only have positive and negative, so all the false negative will become negative. In these cases, in particular population, you can have a certain number of indeterminate. What to do with indeterminate? You don't know. If the patient is immunosuppressed, you consider that as an infected. So the indeterminate are the little bit of... And we can see that depending from the population, from 3 to 5% of the test can be indeterminate. But there is no test which is 100% specific, and but definitely it's much better than the skin test in that respect. Yep.
Last question, Dr. Yesh.
Yes, please. Is there any difference between the two type of gamma interferon testing,
yeah.
I mean positivity and so on? And then my second question, do you think there is any threshold above this level of interferon we can think about an active disease and not only a latent disease?
Very good questions, again. So the two tests are very similar because they use the same peptides and they measure the same cytokine, which is interferon gamma. However, the QuantiFERON TB is an ELISA. The other one, the ELISPOT, the T-SPOT TB is an ELISPOT. That means that in the ELISPOT, you need to isolate white blood cells. So it's more labor intensive. So the model of the ELISPOT in Europe is that you send your blood test to a central lab, which is doing the test and sending you the result. With the QuantiFERON test, you can do the test in your own lab because your lab is doing ELISA all the day. So it's very much dependent on you. If you think you're going to use a lot of tests and you want the results readily available, there will be the QuantiFERON. If you're doing few, let's say you're a transplant center and you do few sites and few tests and you want to have a test which is very precise and very accurate, you can do the ELISPOT and send the test. There is clearly a dynamic because the level of interferon gamma is proportional to the level of antigen. So the more antigen you have, the more interferon gamma it is. Now, it's not cannot be used as a single test. It can be used for longitudinal tests. So when I have a patient which is immunosuppressed and I want to monitor for occurrence of TB, I measure the level of interferon gamma every 6 months or 12 months. Because I know if the level is stable, the likelihood of an active TB is very low. If they see the increase of the level, then I take a chest X-ray or a high-resolution scan. Now, the bottom line is that in the single patient, there is no way to say, this is 10 units, this is 2 units, this is TB, this is not TB. There is a tendency to there, but it's very difficult to use in clinical practice. In the single patient, the longitudinal monitoring instead is very useful.
Thank you very much.